Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game with me, Kevin Day, and Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. Kieran, I don't know where you get into the habit of gurning when we start doing it's very off-putting. It's very funny. It's all right. It's
just a happy person.
I know, but it just plays into Ali's narrative that we're two grown-up intelligent men with a childish sense of humour. And this is not a day for childish sense of humour, Kieran. It's an important day. It's questions day, Kieran, but we have a big news story, and I think we may apologise, Kieran, in advance to people who were expecting their question to be answered today, because it's quite possible that this one news story may take us well into question time, Kieran, because I've got some questions about it and myself. And it's quite possible there will be some ears burning, Kieran, because I think people will know where we're heading here, Kieran. We're recording this on Saturday morning, so it might be possible that the FA and the Premier League have done the right thing and humiliated themselves by prostrating themselves in front of the country, apologising and retracting their shocking decision. Because, Kieran, we've been predicting, we said they're coming for the Carabao Cup. They'll be coming, but we were wrong, Kieran, in some kind of bizarre punishment beating, I assume, from the Premier League for the EFL not accepting the 35 quid offer that they've made them for the next 10 years. We're seeing FA Cup replays scrapped from the first round, Kieran, that's the first question we're going to be getting into. Why from the first round, if we're doing all this for seven teams that are involved in Europe, why are they stopping replays from the first round? And I'm trying very hard not to swear here, Kieran. Ali phoned me up this morning to say, she phoned me up on Thursday night because I talked her through the tweet I was going to send, and she went, "Don't send that for various legal reasons, and you'll probably get taken." So I slept on it, and I sent the one I sent yesterday, which is angry enough. So off you go, Kieran. The floor is yours.
Okay. So what we have seen is a joint announcement from the Premier League and the Football Association. So that represents 20 clubs out of the 804 clubs who entered the FA Cup this season. And actually, it reflects the interests, as you rightly said, of six or seven clubs from the Premier League. My understanding, talking from senior sources or contacting senior sources at the EFL, was the first that they knew about it was around about 30 minutes before the press release was made. The decision which has been made is as follows. First of all replays are being scrapped. Why the replays for the first and the second round is beyond me. And let's be honest here. If you do talk to some people who own or connected with League One and League Two clubs, they say, well, first of all, you know, there's not that many replays. And secondly, that they are not in themselves big earners. But then you talk to the non-league clubs. Yeah, and if you're a non-league club and you get Derby County, Portsmouth, Sunderland when they were in League One, if you get one of those clubs, it is transformative. So I think the argument that's been put forward that it doesn't make any difference. It doesn't make a difference to the League One and Two clubs themselves in rounds one and two, but it certainly does if you're in the National League or below. So the decision is to scrap replays from round one. The second decision is that there is going to be no midweek round of matches, which I think was round five, but that was only introduced a few years ago. So it's not as if it's actually part of the tradition of the club. It's just reversing to where we were. The third decision, and the justification given by the Football Association and the Premier League is, oh, you know, we're a bit concerned about player welfare, fixture congestion. And you go, oh, okay. There is a round table decision to be made with regards to players' welfare. You see FIFPro making those comments. You know, we know Maheta of the PFA, and you know he's told me off at times, and I've said things with regards to the number of fixtures and so on. And I absolutely get, and you know, I'm privileged enough. I now teach on PFA courses, and you do get to see football players as human beings as opposed to commodities. And they're absolutely right that fixture congestion is an issue. But why did the Premier League therefore stay silent when the Champions League was increased by probably four games, potentially more? Why has the Premier League been pretty silent with regards to the introduction of the FIFA World Club Cup Championship, which is going to be a vastly expanded format? Why has the Premier League been quiet with regards to the expanded FIFA World Cup, which is going to involve more players from the Premier League going to play more matches and so on? So that does seem strange. And it therefore also seems strange that the Premier League, as part of this agreement, has decided to scrap the winter break. And the purpose of the winter break was to acknowledge that players are being overworked. And this was to give them some additional recovery time. And yeah, I mean, the clubs would go off for warm winter training. But that was the whole point about it. It was relaxed training. It wasn't intense training for the next match and so on. So that was the decision that was made. And it was a joint announcement from both the Premier League and the Football Association. And you looked at that and you go, well, hold on, the EFL has not been mentioned here. You know, why not? And the EFL's response was, it's been diplomatically worded. Disappointed is management speak for extremely cheesed off. I'm going to try to not swear here because, you know, let's try to be professional about this. The EFL made it perfectly clear that they'd not been considered. And then you started to see a trickle, which became far more than a trickle, of announcements from individual clubs on their websites, through their social media channels. And it was quite clear that practically every EFL club, there'd been a number of National League clubs as well, at League One and League Two level in the main, are extremely unhappy about this decision. Why have the FA gone ahead with this decision? They say it was, you know, it's fantastic rebranding of the FA Cup. Well, they've been given £33 million by the Premier League. So let's not forget about this. And this, again, brings us back to a broader issue of the independent regulator. I'll be honest, as much as I've worked with DCMS, I've presented to the fan-led review and so on, my view all along has been, in an ideal world, we should not need a regulator in English football, because that is the role of the Football Association. But the Football Association has systematically and historically failed in its duty towards the sport, because it's been so craven towards the Premier League in particular that it's as much use as a paper teacup. It's not said how that £33 million is being distributed. And again, I've spoken to a chief executive of more than one EFL club, and they've said, we're not Luddites. We acknowledge where the likes of Manchester United and Liverpool are and so on. But where's this £33 million going to be distributed? Why aren't the Premier League's quite happy to do a deal with the FA, but the Premier League is not prepared to do a deal with the EFL over redistribution?
I already had a lot of things to ask you, Kieran, and just in that explanation you gave there, that very clear and lucid explanation, I jotted down a few more. Firstly, if this was anything to do with player welfare, as Meheta said yesterday, then the FA and the Premier League would have included the PFA in their discussions before this decision was made. Secondly, leave aside the finances, Kieran, which we will be coming on to, and how big a blow this could be to some clubs, it's inherently unfair anyway, because the home club already had a big advantage, and now the home club has got a huge advantage, which is not right. The response of the clubs you mentioned, Morecambe is my favourite one. Morecambe tweeted, and it's a real hold my pint tweet from Morecambe. I've just written down a couple of these are quotes. Morecambe say football is broken. This shows a huge level of contempt by decision makers, indicates a need for an independent regulator as soon as possible. A decision made by a handful of teams spending sums of money that is beyond comprehension. But it's a financial thing that I don't... And I presume, Kieran, that this is part of the narrative that we've been discussing for 6 months, the Premier League's failure to agree a distribution deal to the EFL. I presume this is either a shot across the bows or a show of power, because if the statement on Thursday had included, right, this is the financial compensation you'll be getting for any team that would have had a replay, you'll be getting £10,000 or whatever, and some kind of sliding scale, that would be fine. But the fact that there's no mention of financial inconvenience at all, to me, is just beyond contempt. And the fact that they didn't include the EFL in any consultation is a shameful... It's sticking two fingers up at the EFL, Kieran. And essentially, and there were two journalists on Sky yesterday. I won't name them, and I'll tell you. To be honest, I was too busy shouting obscenities at the screen to note their names. But one of them saying, "Well, you know, they should have done some consultation, but the EFL will have to realise this is how football is going from now on. It's important to recognise that you have to serve the needs of the clubs that are going to be in Europe, because that reflects on Europe. You know, we need to get the coefficient up. We need to get an extra place in Europe for English clubs next season." Another one of them quoted Arsene Wenger, who apparently said, "The trouble with the English fixture system is that it was drawn up in the 1920s and 1930s, and we're in the 2020s now." It's no, the trouble with the English fixture system is you've now got five or six clubs who expect the rest of football to bow to their thing. And this nonsense that is player welfare. Every time these clubs get a spare couple of days off and they haven't got a replay, they'll be out to Dubai. They'll be playing a friendly somewhere. So it's nothing to do with player. It's just uncaring, Kieran. It just, for me, it's designed to look that way. And, you know, you talk about senior sources that you've spoken to. One of those senior sources was on an FA Cup committee, I understand, and he knew nothing about it.
That is correct. The FA then went and threw the EFL under a bus, because following the response from the EFL, the FA says, "Well, hold on. The EFL were aware of these discussions." And again, if you talk to people at senior level at the EFL, they say, "Yeah, everything's on the table. We're not denying that. You know, we do have this ludicrous position now that the only two-legged game in English football, in English professional football, effectively, is the Carabao Cup semi-final." And which, irony of ironies, tends to take place between four Premier League clubs out of the top six. And that's the only bullet they've got in their arsenal. And they've got a pea shooter up against a Sherman tank. And they had one other pea shooter, which was the FA Cup replays. And now the FA has taken that away with it. And for the FA to come out and say that the EFL were aware of the decision. No, the EFL were not aware of the decision. They were aware and they were involved in discussions. And then effectively the Premier League and the FA went away into a separate room and said, "Let's just do what's best for the Glazers. Let's do what's best for FSG. Let's do what's best for Stan Kroenke. Let's do what is best for private equity." The Premier League has now got its hand so far up the backside of the Football Association that it's actually now pulling its vocal cords, because I saw the second press release from the Football Association, and you might as well have heard those words. You know, this is what the Premier League want us to say, and for £31 million, we'll say it. And let's not be hypocrites. You know, if somebody wants to go and sponsor the price of football for £31 million, we'll say what you want us to say as well. But yeah, at least we openly admit it.
You say that, Kieran, but we have turned down a rather large sponsorship deal from somebody because we thought it would affect our integrity when it came to discussing gambling. It's one thing to be aware of discussions, Kieran. We've all been in pubs at away games when you see two blokes in the corner looking at us and clearly having a discussion, and you know the discussion is about you. and you just hope that the decision is not to come over your direction with a broken pool cue. And I just want to point out as well, a friend of mine who's a coach at Hereford, who would describe himself as a Legacy fan the way we do.
Yeah, yeah.
And this will sound like a terrific, terrible Legacy fan thing to say, but Hereford Newcastle, arguably the most famous FA Cup game in the history of that wonderful trophy, that Hereford Newcastle was a replay. So that wouldn't have happened on the current FA's watch. And that indicates to me, Kieran, that the FA are not really aware of the symbolic value of essentially the one thing they've got left that with control over. The FA, you know, it says the FA Cup, Kieran. It's their name on the tin, if you like. They keep telling us that it's the most prestigious tournament in the world football. And clearly they don't believe that themselves, or they were just so blinded by the check that they don't give a sod what the rest... Well, they don't give a sod what the rest of the world think about the FA Cup anymore, because we've seen its importance declining with every new European tournament that arrives.
And that is due to finances. And yeah. Nobody is denying the fact that the bigger clubs want to make more money. All they have to do is to be a little bit more conciliatory, acknowledge the importance of the FA Cup as part of the romance and the history of the game. Because you rightly cited Ronnie Radford. We've got Manchester United playing Coventry City. Well, immediately I think of that diving header from Keith Houchin. And I'm not a Coventry City fan, but that was a great moment in FA Cup history. The replays are not the most critical issue. It's the degree of contempt that both the Football Association and the Premier League have, A, for players. Players weren't consulted with regards to the expanded competitions that these organisations are both happy to sign off with. B, the fans. It's our game, not theirs. And see, the fact that the EFL and the non-league clubs were completely cut out. Were they involved in discussions at some point? Yeah, but discussions and decisions are not the same thing. So, I'll be discussing with my granddaughters, what time we're going to bed. What time we're putting them to bed tomorrow night when we're looking after them, or whatever it's going to be. The decision ultimately is mine, or that of the Baroness. We'll say, if you're good girls, we'll give you half an hour after tea and so on.
We know, Kieran, we know where you fit in that pecking order.
Yes,
and
that's true.
It's not between the Baroness and the girls, Kieran. It's the Baroness, the girls, Finley, and then you're somewhere down there. There you go, see?
There he goes. Finley's not...
And we do try and reflect different sides of a story, Kieran, sometimes less successfully than others. And there is a view, and certain people have expressed this, journalists, that if lower league clubs, if non-league clubs are reliant on the occasional one-off replay against a big team to ensure their survival for another season or two, then that's not a good financial model. But no, I don't think any of us are actually saying that. I mean, yes, you had clubs like Exeter who were on the brink of catastrophe until they got a replay against Man United, which saved them for the next two or three years. But it's bigger than that. No one's saying that you're taking away a potential lifeline, although you are. It's more a question, like you say, of why the EFL not involved in these discussions? Why is there no financial recompense for these discussions? It's part of a bigger picture. And as you said, the FA and the Premier League are being so shockingly untransparent about the whole thing. That's the main issue, isn't it? I mean, there's still no real explanation in that first statement for the FA and the Premier League about why they're doing this. And there's been, I think the FA, as somebody said on Sky yesterday, the FA apparently does have a head of communication. So where he or she is at this particular moment, apart from under a duvet, I don't know. But yet again, it's whatever the rights and wrongs of the decision, it's been shockingly badly mishandled.
It's been very poorly managed, and I thought it was quite telling that when the second press release came out from the FA, which effectively threw anybody at the EFL that has been on an FA Cup committee or has been involved in discussions, and as we said, discussions are not the same as decisions. It threw them under the bus by naming, because all you had to do is to go on to the FA website to find out who these people were who are on various committees. And then, you know, they start getting grief. Well, why didn't you know about it? And, well, you know, we've been in contact with them. And they said, well, we did not know about the decision. And you're absolutely right that clubs should not be reliant on an FA Cup draw, and they're not. You know, but it can get you out of a tricky situation. We therefore go back to the broader issue of the level of funding for football in this country, and how that funding should become. And again, I'm going to try to be fair to the Premier League. It does put money in to other divisions, which doesn't take place in other countries. Parachute payments and solidarity payments. Parachute payments only came into being in around about 2005, 2006. Solidarity payments were initially volunteered by the Premier League to clubs in the Championship, League One and League Two. And then the Premier League said, yeah, we're thinking of taking them away unless you agree to the Elite Player Performance Plan, i.e. it means that the Premier League can take all of the academy kids for a pittance away from those. So, yeah, the Premier League was doing, you know, it had its much bigger picture hat. There are workarounds to this. You know, why not have a seeding system for the third round of the FA Cup such that,
yeah,
you know, the 20 Premier League clubs are guaranteed matches against clubs from League One and Two. And then, let's be honest, those clubs in League One and Two can choose the venue. And A, the fans of those clubs could get a much greater chance of going to Anfield, to Old Trafford, to Stamford Bridge, to the Emirates, to the Etihad, you know, and so on, which they'll have a great day out if that's what they want, or if they want to try their luck at home, because it could be that club's finances are suitably secure. That way, the clubs benefit financially. The fans will actually end up seeing their clubs play against a giant on a more regular basis. And, you know, I think they'd be willing to say, under those circumstances, we're quite happy to say, you know, goodbye to replays. But get involved in the discussion rather than the we know best. Billionaires, private equity organisations and hedge funds are not known for doing what is in the best interests of everybody. They do what's in their own best interest. And self-interest is part of life. And I'm not going to criticise them. They're successful at what they do, which is making money. But they don't understand that the FA Cup is not about, it's not a money-making competition in its own right, particularly anyway. You get £2 million, £4 million for winning it. But there are broader issues which people who understand football understand, but these people, and why should they understand football? You know, they've spent their lives not interested in football. It's just another form of the entertainment industry to them.
Hi, I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
I mean, there was a time not that long ago, Kieran, when lower league clubs had the option of switching to the big club if they were drawn, weren't they? Sometimes on a spurious safety excuse, they'd go, oh no, our floodlights are terrible, we can't have a game at our flood, we'll go to Old Trafford. But I just want to finish, Kieran, as we've spoken about this enough, and we will be speaking about it again in weeks to come, hopefully after that FA Premier League back down. But I just want to emphasise one thing, Kieran, that we I kind of glossed over initially. And for me, this indicates how serious this matter is. In that you told me you'd spoken to somebody on senior on an FA committee who knew nothing about this. And for me, the fact that the EFL didn't know is bad enough, but the fact that somebody at the FA didn't know about this, Kieran, that's why I want you to say this out loud, so just to emphasise to our listeners how shabby a decision this is.
It is disgraceful. The FA Council weren't aware of it. The FA Cup Committee were not aware of it. This is a shady and shabby decision which has been made behind closed doors. Whoever was making that decision, I think they should now front up. They should go on Newsnight, go on the 6 o'clock news, come on the podcast, come on the Price of Football, and we will not be hostile to them. We have never been hostile to a single person who's been a guest on this show. And we just want to say, just explain to us your thought process. We've said that replays probably have to go because we now have a Champions League format in which there are group games taking place in January. So there is no room for third and fourth round replays. Why they've scrapped the first and second round replays is still something which nobody can get their head around. But be honest and be upfront. And that's what we're not getting.
Yeah. We don't want the FA going on Newsnight, Kieran. We want people to be able to see their abject apology. They're much better off coming on the pod. Let's do some questions, Kieran. We're not going to get through all of them. I predict we'll get as far as the Sheffield question, which is a very interesting one. The first one comes from Coventry, and it comes from Luke Judson. And again, it reflects the fact that our listeners are getting really interested in the idea of stadiums being used for something other than football. And Luke Judson, I won't do a Coventry accent because it really annoys Ali, because she spent a lot of her formative years growing up near Coventry. And she says, in the way that people from Salford and Manchester claim to have different accents, she claims that the Coventry and Birmingham accent is very different. I've listened to a lot of specials songs here. I don't see it. For some reason, digging a hole for myself here, Kim, which I suspect I shouldn't be doing. But Luke's question, this will be the one time when Ali says to me, you know, I thought I'd listen to the pod for once. And I really quite enjoyed it until that first question about Coventry. Luke says, how much does the Coventry Building Society Arena, I don't like saying that.
It's the Rico.
Highfield Road, Kieran. I know it's not there anymore. But how much does the Coventry Building Society Arena make per annum for extras like the hotel, the casino, exhibition centre, the external car parks, bars, job centre, concerts, etc.? And is the stadium worth the most extra profits in the Championship?
If we go back to Companies House and look at the accounts of Arena Coventry Limited before it went into administration, what I've done, I've gone back to 2019. So we're looking at a pre-COVID environment. It was generating just under £11 million of revenue, but it was losing £3 million a year on that. So it was not a particular commercial success. What we have seen since then, first of all, Arena Coventry went into administration, which led to the problems that Cov had. We've now got new owners who are the Fraser Group. And on the back of that, we have a hotel. There's been a significant increase in the number of people employed. We've not yet seen the accounts, so I can't comment on the actual numbers. And as Luke said, they now have a car park and they have an ANPR, an automatic number picture recognition car park. And I don't like those cameras. And the reason why I don't like those cameras is that I've driven to London on one occasion in the last decade, which was to go to see The Cure play at Wembley because there was a tube strike. And I went through one of those cameras, not knowing it, because I always use the train to get to London. They sent the bill to us, or to my old address, and by the time it came through to me, it cost me £648
dear.
For one trip to London, which is even more expensive than Southern Rail.
That's a lot of money to see The Cure, isn't it? And let's face it, you're not getting cheered up. You're not getting cheered up by seeing The Cure, are you? So that's a double whammy. I have to say, the way my career is going, Kieran, I encourage Ali to drive through them deliberately just so I can see myself on the screen. our next question, Kieran, comes from Andy Pursehouse, which is a great. Now, if Andy's listening and he would like to let us know the derivation of that surname, I'd be really interested. But Andy's question reflects the fact that our listeners are obsessed with FFP workarounds, Kieran. literally. I'm just terrified that so many of our listeners are in the pub before a game going, never mind who we're playing, just let's see if this one works. So Andy says, as a potential FFP workaround, what is there to stop a rich owner of a club even? That's because I was going to change it to wealthy there, Kieran, but I stopped halfway through and got caught between wealthy and rich and sounded like Jonathan Ross. What's to stop a rich owner of a club which doesn't have large TV earnings, like a Championship club, for example, fixing season ticket sales at a high price, but personally buying every previous season ticket holder for the past three seasons? So buying their season ticket for them. So this owner is buying every single season ticket for season ticket owners and their family, partner and friends to sell the desired amount of season tickets. So what is to stop? You know, Steve Parrish buys 18,000 season tickets, sells them on at a lower, higher price. I think there probably is some kind of bylaw, isn't there, Kieran, to stop this sort of thing?
Well, what you could do is you could sell every season ticket for £3,000, and every season ticket gets you a lottery ticket. And every lottery ticket turns out to be a winning lottery ticket, and the prize of that winning lottery ticket is, let's say, £2,500. I think there could be, at the next meeting of the EFL, they might say, we need to take a look at this. And what they'll do, they'll simply introduce a new bylaw that will prevent it. Any transactions which involve related or associated parties, and clearly if it is from the club owner, that would be classified in that way, effectively now has to go through a fair value panel. And I think it's to say that this would be seen as a backdoor route and it's not genuine revenue. But as we've seen with, you could probably do it in the Premier League, as we saw with Chelsea. And also looking at Chelsea, Roman Abramovich, who, remember, it cost him, it cost him £50 million a year for 19 years, Roman Abramovich. He had a seat, he had a ticket, and they charged him £1 million a year for his ticket. He probably got a free programme and car park space with that. But it actually said in the accounts, he buys a season ticket and we charge him £1 million a year. So it has happened in the past. I think they would try to introduce an emergency law in a similar way to the way that the Premier League did when Newcastle United was acquired by PIF to try to reduce the impact of some related party transactions. But this one, perhaps they've not thought of as yet.
I suspect, Kieran, that the next board meeting of the EFL, FFP workarounds are going to be way down the agenda.
Yes.
Way down into not even any other business. I mean, it's only going to be one item on the next board meeting of the FFP. Mark Goodchild has yet another question about something that is obsessing our fans lately. Mark Goodchild says, with clubs bringing out a new kit every season these days, do we know what the difference in profit generated compared with the days when a new kit came out every two to three seasons? Also, do clubs have, this is a good question, do clubs have a say in how often the kits are made, or is it purely the manufacturer's discretion?
Yeah, let's answer that second question first. Clubs do have a veto. They do have to have the final sign-off in relation to a kit. And that actually makes sense, because you might have a kit designer who is a very good person with fabric and creativity, but isn't necessarily a football fan. So can you imagine if somebody went and designed Celtic's away kit as being orange, for example? That probably wouldn't go down particularly well. They're probably, we need to have a little bit of a chat about this. So the clubs do have a yay or nay with regards to that. They will normally be given, and, you know, the next season's kits have already been signed off on, by the way. Those initial discussions normally start in September, October, and they'll be signed off before the end of the calendar year, as a rule.
Kim, but Mark's point as well about, is it the club or the manufacturer deciding when they change the kit? I presume it's the club who decides they want a new kit every season, rather than the manufacturer saying, no, we'll do you one every two seasons, isn't it?
Well, that will be, that will be part of the overall agreement, because we've seen in respect of Brentford, Brentford have said, as far as our home kits are concerned, we're going to keep them for two seasons, because we don't feel, and this isn't a criticism of Brentford fans, they're as loyal as the fans of any other club, we don't feel that we've got a global market, or that we are a global fashion brand, in which fans are likely to be wanting to change. So we think it's good for sustainability. We're taking into consideration fans' pockets as well. When it comes to other clubs, Manchester United have just signed a new deal with Adidas, which is worth £900 million. That is to provide three kits a season. So, yeah, that is actually written into the agreement. And the Manchester United kit launch, a bit like the day the Manchester United accounts come out, is now a big day as far as the Manchester United calendar is concerned, and so on. Adidas are there to make money. You don't make money from selling the same thing year in, year out. So it's essential from their point of view that that £90 million a year, which they're giving to Manchester United, is recouped in terms of maximising the number of units sold. And that's why we now have three kits being changed. That's why we now have different fonts for European matches compared to Premier League matches. That's now we have the pitch-ready kit compared to the stadium kit, and so on. It's all a way for the manufacturers to recoup the money. We had Tom from Castor on the show recently, and it's a competitive market. They, as a disruptor brand, are coming up with ideas, and you can see that the big boys are going to fight back as well in terms of pricing and availability and distribution and all of these things. But it's a very expensive business to be in.
Yeah. Two things. So basically the answer to Mark's question is the difference between profit on a kit 30 years ago and now is huge, massive.
Oh, yeah.
And secondly, God love you for saying that kit launch day is as exciting as the Man United accounts release day for Man United fans. Because there might be a few listening to this who agree with you, Kieran, but I would reckon the vast majority of Man United fans would have kit launch day circled in their diary, but probably haven't got accounts day circled in their diary. This next question, Kieran, this is an interesting question, Kieran. Interesting, sophisticated question. And it comes from Alan Day. That's a mere coincidence, Kieran. It's interesting, fascinating. No, I don't believe it's quite an uncommon name, Dave, but I believe there's a car franchise called Alan Day somewhere. So I'm hoping that some kind of Swiss Tony lookalike has taken time off from selling cars to unsuspecting people to ask this question. But it's a very interesting question. And Alan Day says, having recently read an article on how much operations cost in the NHS, it started me thinking about how clubs budget for and manage the care of their players throughout the season. Given the number of operations now for what were career-ending injuries like cruciates and Achilles tears, this must now cost clubs a considerable sum, especially as most of them won't be using the NHS as well, Kieran, I imagine. So is it possible to answer the following? What is the average season spend for a club in each of the top four English divisions on health and operations, and what insurance policies and cover do the clubs take out? Now, I know we have spoken about that second question in the past, but I think it's worth a brief revisit. But I think that first question, I don't know if it's possible to answer that, but it is interesting because like he says, injuries that would have been career ending a while ago, and injuries are being picked up much quicker now because of better sports science. So there's a lot of minor operations going on. We see a lot of players out for two games, three games because they're in for keyhole surgery. So how much is it costing?
Right. I've been in contact with some chief executives of clubs with regards to this. Delighted to say that people connected with the EFL clubs have been fantastic and forthright in terms of their answers. Can't say the same from the Premier League. So there is an insurance policy, which is effectively, it's a bit like an insurance policy in a car or a house, that you pay the first X and then, so there's an excess as far as the scheme is concerned. The person I spoke to with regards to the championship said theirs last season was in the region of £170,000. They normally expect it to be somewhere between perhaps £150,000 and £200,000. You know, fingers crossed. But so you know that's what, $3,000 to $4,000 a week. It's a lot of money. I spoke to one owner in the in League Two who said last season it cost them £50,000. And I spoke to another owner in League Two who said it was £32,000 a couple of years ago. And to quote them, but then our manager signed a load of shite players. And as a result, they were so many of them injured that our premium's now gone up to £100,000.
I'm not going to say it out loud, Kieran, but I can take a stab at which club owner that was. I think it's something.
Why, it's secret club owners, course, as always.
Absolutely. That's interesting. But I suppose it's very difficult to answer Alan's question, because there isn't really an average season spent for a club, is there, on operations? Or you can't really budget at the start of the season. You can't say, well, let's put £50,000 aside for operations, because you hope they don't happen. So, and as we've discussed at the start of this pod, clubs at that level are living hand to mouth. So they're going to worry about the serious injury and operation cost when it happens. I presume, Kieran, and I'd like to hear from insurance people about, I presume for most football clubs, it's their public liability insurance cover that's the, you know, it's in case anything happens to any of the supporters in the ground, that would be their biggest insurance cost, I would have thought, even more than players, would it?
Couple of hundred, I don't know, because I mean, if it's a couple of hundred grand, you're talking, that's 2 or 3% of your total income for public liability. I'll see if we can get hold of some insurance people. I know there are some people in the industry that listen to the show, so if they want to drop us a line, Kieran@priceoffootball.com, I'll gladly pass it on.
I would be interested in that, Kieran, because there are, in my industry, there are theatres, of some quite big theatres, who are making the decision, because it turns out it's not compulsory to have public liability insurance, which surprised me, but there are some theatres who are taking the risk of not paying and not having it in the hope that nothing happens to somebody in the theatre. Our last question, Kieran, I'm going to make this the last question because it has been a point. So there's no point in me apologising to the people whose questions are not being answered. There's only two of them. They don't know who they are anyway, basically. But this question comes from Al Evans, and I'm going to share something with you, Kieran. When I first saw this email on Thursday night from producer Guy, I'd had a glass of wine, and I freaked out a little bit because I thought it said AI Evans. And I thought if we've reached a stage where we're having to answer computer-generated questions, we're in big trouble. But it's Al Evans, luck. And this is actually, I think this is a fascinating question, Kieran. Al Evans says, for many years, I've been puzzled as to why Sheffield seems to be constantly overlooked by those wishing to make major investments in English football. It's England's fifth largest city with two well-supported clubs that have both spent well over half their histories in the top flight. South Yorkshire has a population of almost 1.5 million, all in well under an hour's drive to either club, so it offers plenty of potential for growth. As a Blade, I'd obviously prefer any major investor to look at us rather than the South Barnsley Massive. But can you explain why the big investors seem to look elsewhere rather than Sheffield, please? Part of the reason I wanted this question to be asked is I just love a proper fan, can't resist a dig at their rivals, the South Barnsley Massive. But of course, it's the home of football. You know, it's Sheffield, the first acknowledged club. You know, despite Steve Parish's attempts to indicate that Palace might be nearly as old as him, but Sheffield is the traditional heartland of English football, which you'd think would add to the bonus. You know, if you're buying Sheffield United or Sheffield Wednesday, you would use that as a point, wouldn't you, when you to make more money organising trips to the home of English football. But they are huge clubs. There's no two ways about it. United and Wednesday are huge football clubs. And really, you'd expect, growing up, you'd expect one or either of them to be in the Premier League at any time.
I agree with you entirely. Without giving too many details away, I quite often get phone calls and inquiries from international investors or people representing international investors. And one of the things that they will ask is, where do you think there are opportunities in football? And Sheffield is one of the ones that we mentioned. I think there's, and if you take a look at the two owners at present, one comes from the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia and the other one comes from Thailand. And both in theory have access to wealth, although I think as far as Sheffield United in particular are concerned, they probably feel that's not actually being transferred into reality with regards to the amount of money that's been spent. I think there are lots of positives with regards to Sheffield as a football city in terms of the history and the heritage. You and I, growing up, we remember Tony Curry. We remember Wednesday getting to two cup finals in the season. And they were, Sheffield, both clubs have been in the Premier League. So it is attractive. What appeals to overseas investors? First of all, proximity to London, let's be honest. Not a great score there. Secondly, proximity to an airport. Can I fly over? Well, Leeds Bradford's not that far away. So I think there are opportunities. It comes down to the willingness of the current owners to sell those clubs to, let's be honest, probably American owners or American investors at a price which is acceptable to both parties. And what you do see is a lot of stubbornness and intransigence from existing owners. A lot of the time, they don't want to walk away from a club having made a loss, and therefore they will continue, even if it means that they're operating on a restricted budget, or in the case of Chancery at Sheffield Wednesday, he just appears completely oblivious of making common sense business decisions. And I think that's caused a lot of bad feeling amongst Wednesday fans.
But it's a thriving city as well. I remember 20 or 30 years ago, if you went to an away match in Sheffield, you'd go to St Pancras, which was just filthy. It's soot encrusted. And you'd get off at Sheffield and you'd go, oh, well, St Pancras isn't that bad after all. Now, you go to St Pancras, you get off the train at Sheffield, it's fantastic. It's beautiful in the middle of Sheffield. It's got a thriving music and culture scene. Historically, brilliant music, arts. So it should be a city that can sustain a profit-making Premier League club. But as you say, unfortunately, they've attracted people that are unable to do that.
Yeah, and I think it's great that they've got two big clubs, and they are big clubs in the division. Leeds has got one. Newcastle's got one. Birmingham, which is a much bigger city than Sheffield, has two. Manchester and Liverpool, again, bigger cities in terms of population, have two. And they've also got the benefit of the clubs in those cities of, some of them having very big international fan bases. I think the potential within Sheffield is huge. You just need the right owner and the right business plan to take it to the next level.
Thank you to everyone who's donated to the pod via our Patreon page. And if you'd like to make a small monthly contribution to blah, blah, how many times have I said that, Kieran? And I should be able to do it in my sleep rather than running my finger across the script on the laptop. If you'd like to make a small monthly contribution to the pod and get access to our chat community and our regular quizzes, that would be very kind of you. And you can do that by going to patreon.com/priceoffootball. Particularly if you want to take part in our end of season quiz, which is always fun. I sounded like a scoutmaster. It's always fun, that one, boys. Come on, boys and girls. We can do this. If you have a question you'd like answered on the show, email us at questions@priceoffootball.com and take yourself to the same website if you want to buy our book or get yourself a Price of Football t-shirt. Just to warn you well in advance, we are going to shift the questions pod from Monday to Tuesday in the middle of May. Apologies if this does mess with your routine. But recording and editing on Sundays is proving trickier than it was when we started out. We'll make the switch in May. We'll be back on Thursday with our news pod. In the meantime, I shall hand you over to Mr. Kieran Maguire for his customary farewell.
Yeah, and genuine apologies. It's really down to me. I need to get a bit of Sunday back in terms of travelling because I start lectures at 9 o'clock on a Monday morning at Liverpool. I need to recover some Sunday and spend time with my grandchildren, which is important, of course.
Of course it is.
There's various ways of supporting the show. Patreon is great if you want to have an advert free option. We have got a little Discord group where we drip in little stories that we can't put on the show. Chatham House rules apply, etc. But it's another way you can support the show, and that's to give us a review. Say whatever you think. By all accounts, makes no difference, but it helps us in the charts, helps us with the algorithms. You could even say you would rather have the show presented by Jeremy Paxman and the Football Association official spokesman. I think that would be an interesting discussion. Not as friendly as ours.
One of us is going to be harder to find than the other. But Paxman might get better answers out of him than we do with our polite approach. Yes. I sometimes regret our polite approach to it. But having said that, the one we had on our last interview was fantastic.
Yes. I think it's quite timely that we've got Stuart Andrew, the sports minister, as a guest on the show coming up this week. So I suspect he might have one or two comments with regards to the decision that's just been made by the Premier League and the Football Association and not the EFL and not taking into consideration anybody else within the football universe.
Kieran, well done for being professional. I've been looking at my piece of paper, wondering why I've got the name Stuart Andrew underlined with exclamation marks. And obviously it's a reminder to myself to mention during our discussion about replays, we've got the sportsman coming on. We do. We have the sportsman. Well done, Kieran. Thank you. That's you deserve Sundays off for that, Kieran.
Thank you very much. Bye. The Price of Football. Price of Football.